Okay. We talk. There are a couple of areas we talk about. Dine Mamonos is mostly in Choshen Mishpat. However, there are two areas of Tzedakah, of Mamonos, which even though Dine Mamonos don't appear in Choshen Mishpat, but rather appear in Yerideya. One of them, the most common, and really it's a little bit hard to understand why it's in Yerideya. Not as Hilchos Ribis, which we clearly associate very much with monetary law, but nonetheless it's in Yerideya because Issa Ribis is an Issa Veheter concept, and also has Nafkaminas in terms of when we have Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, we have a famous klal, the Hilchos Karav Beisure, Ukushmuel Bedine. So it's an interesting question there, since if you should have a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, if you're talking Issa of Ribis, where do we fall that? We usually assume that Ribis is essentially an Issa concept, and therefore it's an issur, a prohibition to take ribis, and as such, it's mostly it is in Yerideya. The other mamonos area in which we have appears in Yerideya, that is the area of Hilchos Tzedakah. And why do I say it's clearly a mamonos issue, but more than that, it says that the distribution of Tzedakah is also a dine mamonos, and for that reason, he says when you distribute them, when you collect them, in the beginning of Bava Basra, when you collect tzedakah, you have to have two people to collect tzedakah because enos nisrael hatzibur pachas mishnayim. But to decide who's entitled to get, who you can distribute tzedakah to, that requires three. It's a chalukah of tzedakah is three because the chalukah of tzedakah is also a kind of dinim amaris. Who's entitled to collect, who's entitled to receive the tzedakah, who's not entitled to receive the tzedakah, how much should we give each person, how much should we not give each person. And I saw a fascinating discussion this morning we're not going to get into, but is it better to distribute the tzedakah evenly? Let's say there are 500 families that you're trying to give tzedakah to, and you have a certain amount. Let's say you have $50,000 and you have 500 families. Should you give each family $100 and just decide evenly? Right? Flat fee, all the families get the same amount of tzedakah. Well, should we say no? Let's evaluate the needs of each family. A family that has a greater need should get more. A family that has less needs should get less. Right? These are dinei mamonos. The person has to decide the need of each family, whether they are entitled to the chlal to get, and if they are entitled, how much to give. So this is also, although it appears hilchos tzedakah appear in Yerideya, because again, it's an issue of, in a certain sense, of issur v'heter, it's an issur v'lo tameis tzedakah, lo tikpos tzedakah. So there are aspects of issur v'heter in it. However, this is also has an aspect of dinei mamonos. In particular, and that's what we're going to discuss today, I want to talk about Mataros Avionim, which may or may not be similar to Hilchos Tzedakah. Therefore, the question is, because Mataros Avionim is coming up, a lot of places there are appeals for Mataros Avionim, and the question is, who is entitled to receive Mataros Avionim? Who is not entitled to receive it? Who is considered an Ani? What is the definition? What is the halachic definition of an Ani? They always put out now, they have the basic level in every country. They have the poverty line. Okay, is the get of an ani determined by the poverty line, or can a person, not necessarily poverty, you can have a person who perhaps is below the poverty line, and you have a person who in Princeton theory may be below the poverty line, but he may not be considered an ani, and you can have someone else who may be way above the poverty line, but may still be considered an ani. That's what we're going to have to see. We'd like to see in today's discussion. Okay, let's take a look first, just to go through the sources. In Megillas Esther, towards the end of the Megillah, Mordechai and Esther send out a message to all the people all the Jewish people throughout the world to make Purim into a day of Yontov, Mishteh Simcha, Mishloach Manot, Umatanot La'evyonim, and to give out Matanot Levyonim. The Aruch HaShulchan raises a fascinating point on this question. When we talk about Matanot Levyonim, the word Evyon has a specific meaning as opposed to Ani. If you take a look in the Chumash, it talks about Tashok, Sachker, and Yiva Evyon. Rashi points out that the word Evyon, right, I'm sticking a little diktuk, right, the word Evyon is from the Rashi, said the word Ta'eb. So it's always needing, is always in need, is always desiring for more. Evyon is, Ani is someone who is poor, but someone who is an Evyon is someone who is constantly always seeking, he is destitute, he is in a much greater need than a standard Ani. The Aruch HaShulchan raises the question, if it says Matanos le'evyonim, Perhaps this is an indication that we should be giving the money not to any ani, but maybe by Purim, by Matanas Levionim, there's a special chiyuv to give to the Evion specifically, people who are the most poor, the most needy. So the Aruch HaShulchan, and in fact there are one or two poskim who do mention this idea, not generally accepted, but Aruch HaShulchan mentions this concept, and actually has a fascinating conclusion which is generally not accepted. Says Aruch HaShulchan, the second source, Yerayli, Af agav de batar, ani ve'evin shnei dvarim heim, de'evin yoser me'une me'ani, he's more poor, v'neged ze'evion ein lebosh levakesh. But he points out that there's another flip side between the ani and the evion. The Evyon has a much greater need. On the other hand, this Evyon, who everybody knows is poor, and is probably already collecting in many places, so to collect, another person doesn't bother him to knock on someone else's door and to ask him for money. An Ani, who's not as poor, so on the one hand, his need may not be as much, however, he's more embarrassed, and when he does turn to someone for assistance, it's much more embarrassing for him, and he would not want to have to go to more doors than necessary, because for him he has not been accustomed to collecting. To go to each person is much, much more embarrassing, and therefore it says that Aruch HaShulchan points out that it says that in the part that I omitted on account of space, but Aruch HaShulchan points out that in certain halachas we give preference to the ani, lo sashok sachir ni vevyon. There's a certain preference given to the ani, because he will be afraid, he will be embarrassed to ask you, because he doesn't want his need to be as blatant, as evident, whereas the Evyon, his need is already blatant. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that from the fact that Torah says Evyon, we might think that maybe the din of Evyon, only Matanas le'Evyonim, says the Aruch HaShulchan, no. Kevan Megillah Ksiva, Matanas Evyon, name Dafka Evyon, we call it Ein Okein, they'll call Echad. The Aruch HaShulchan concludes it's love Dafka. And it doesn't have to be given only to the most needy. Even a person who's an ani, who's not an evyon, is still entitled to receive the matanas the evyonim, who follows the regular rules of ani. But he says, interestingly, v'hadichtu matanas evyonim revusa ka'amar. Hidafka says that you would think that you should give priority to the ani, as we said before, because the ani is embarrassed to ask, right? And therefore you should make sure to go and to give him, and he should give him right away, so he shouldn't have to ask a lot. So therefore, the ani might be a preference. Kamashlan, you can even be yotze ervusa kamar, that even an evion is good enough, and certainly kavachomer, Aruch HaShulchan concludes, kavachomer, you can be yotze the mitzvah to an ani, who would be too embarrassed to ask. In any case, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that we don't require specifically matanas levionim. He indicates a slight preference dafka to the ani, who would be embarrassed to ask, whereas I saw another post, can they take the more classical wisdom that obviously the greater the need, the more we should have a responsibility to them, and therefore there are one or two poskim who do specifically encourage an evyon as opposed to others, but usually we assume that either one, it's in the ani evyon, and the gedarim of matanas evyonim are pretty much parallel to the gedarim of tzedakah in general. So now we get to the question, what about tzedakah in general? What are the gidrei tzedakah? Who is entitled to receive tzedakah? You fill out a faf? I don't know, what are the criteria? Every tzedakah committee should have a faf. So it says here, Mishnah in Peah, Mi sheyesh lo matayim zuz, lo yito leket shichol peah umayse ani. We know that in the Chumash, there are a number, in addition to regular tzedakah, there are numerous opportunities for tzedakah in the Torah. You have regular mitzvah of tzedakah, people talk to tzedakah yadcha, but then you have the matnas aniyim. There's leket, shichah, and peah, where the ani is entitled to come and take. There's maestro ani this year, in Eretz Yisrael. I'm a little bit more aware of it. This year is the third year of the Shemitah cycle, and therefore this year is a year of maestro ani. Therefore all the vegetables this year have been maestro ani, starting from Rosh Hashanah. But now we pass Tu B'Shvat, the fruit that will begin to grow now, also going to be Ma'aser Ani. And it's a fascinating question, what to do for the farmers, because if you think about it, Ma'aser Rishon has to go to the Levi. There's no Kedusha. Chuma, nowadays, we're not able to give because Chuma is Tameh. What we do with it, it's either burned or it's given to animals. But sometimes it's certain farms, like kibbutzim or zoos, the animals are given, granted over to the Kohen, and therefore Truma Tmea can be eaten by the animal of a Kohen, and therefore that's how when Tnuva, you told it was one, Truma and Truma's Maisa is 1%. So 1% in the house is a little slice of your apple, so we just throw in the garbage. When you talk about Tnuva, who can be getting tons and tons and tons of produce, 1% is a tremendous amount. So therefore, what they try to do for some of the Truma is to give it to animals, to give farms, or hold the whole refit to the Kohanim, and then the Kohanim can do it. Okay, so that's that. But what about Maisa Rishon? Maisa Rishon is 10%. Go to any agriculture, any farmer, and tell him 10% give to the Levi. That's a lot of money for a farmer. His whole profit is not much more than that. Okay? So the Chazon Ish already has a kula which many rely upon. Achshador, I think a little bit more, they're trying to work away from this, but it's still generally accepted that the Maaser Rishon is not in practice given to the Levi, because no one Levi can prove that he's truly a Levi. Since there's no Kedusha to the Truma Samaisos, it's just an issue of Dinei Mamon, so Levi's entitled to Mamon Levi, Shevet Levi, but no Levi is a Levi Miyuchas, and no Levi can prove he's a Levi, so he comes to me, I say, prove to me you're a Levi, I don't know you're a Levi, maybe you're not a Levi. And therefore, the Maisa, Maisa Rishon is usually not given. All right, if you're growing, if you have some Tevel Vadai in your own backyard, and you want to give, you have 10 apples, you want to give one apple to your local Levi, okay, you have a chance to give it. So that's fine. But we have a bigger problem. What about Maisa Ani? This year is the year of Maisa Ani. The farmer's chayav, if a farmer doesn't give Maisa Ani, then he's stealing for the Aniyim. What are you going to say? There's no ani miyuchas. Unfortunately, we can show you many, 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 many aniyim miyuchasim who are belish tzel shel safek, fit all the criteria for aniyim. You can't hide behind the sadiyah of amotzi mechavel of haraya, prove to me that you're a Levi, because aniyim, we can verify that they are in fact in terrible financial need. There was a whole question what to do, how to deal with the issue of Maaser Ani. So there are some places who try to make arrangements to give, some meshek, some kibbutzim, who do try to actually give the Maaser Levi. Not all do. But in any case, this year is a year of Maaser Ani. So who can get the Maaser Ani? What are the rules? So the mission says if you have 200 zuz, then you're too wealthy to receive Maaser Ani. Less than 200 zuz, that's the poverty line, you're allowed to receive all the matnos anim, including Maaser Ani. More than 200 zuz, you're above the poverty line, then you're not. What?
Just give him a vasachas.
Okay, right. So then the mission then continues. Hayelo matayim chasadina, if you had 199, just under the poverty line, even if you go, someone, you knock on someone's door and he gives you $1 million, that's fine. Because when I received the gift, he was an ani. And therefore he was entitled, even if many people give him simultaneously, he is allowed to receive it. Okay, if he has money, the mission continues, but he owes it to other people, he's still considered an ani. And the mission finally concludes that he's not required necessarily to sell, even if he has certain items, his house or other clay tashmish or other household items, he is not necessarily required to sell that if he needs them for his basic living, even though if he would sell them, he would be able to raise money. He has a house. All right, there are a lot of people who have a house. There are people sometimes both people were working. They bought a nice house, all right, furnished the house, and then cut the cutbacks, and they both lost their jobs. They could be living in a beautiful house, but they have no money. They have no food in the fridge because right now they have no income. So you have a situation. So the Mishnah says here that certain the house and certain other basic household utensils, like he can sell off his dishes and make money. He's not required to go akadekach. We'll see in a little bit later how far we take that idea. The question is, where did this matayim zuz come from? Why matayim zuz? Why is that called the poverty line? How do we translate it over to us? Right? How much is matayim zuz? How much is matayim zuz? All right. Now the truth is, it's really a very tricky question. Because we know that talk about the Shia of a Pruta, we work off the, halachically, we work off the value of silver. Okay? Silver, I don't know exactly what it costs now, but what?
$20
for a troy ounce. Okay? Working off Cheshbon, when I made a Cheshbon, was exactly that. I came to a calculation that a Pruta is worth roughly 2.5 cents. Okay? 2.5 cents is more or less what I figured that a pruta comes to. However, it's clear if you look in the Gemara that a pruta was worth purchasing power way beyond that, because the Gemara talks about buying a few fruits for a pruta. Mm-hmm. Also has a book of Chad Gadja, alright? Because Chad Gadja betrays Zuze. So it's two Zuz, and Zuz is 192 prutos. So for 400 prutos, you can get, alright? Betray Zuz, you can get a Chad Gadja. Okay, how much does a Gedi cost? Okay? Now everyone knows that a Gedi costs more than I take 2.5 cents times 400, you're talking about $10. Alright, everybody knows that a Gedi costs more than $10, okay? And a couple of fruits also cost more than 2.5 cents, okay? So I once made a roughly a cheshbon, okay, that I figure purchasing power of pruta then was in the range of 15 cents to 25 cents. Now that was the purchasing power. So in their terms, when they talk about a pruta, it meant about a quarter, which makes a lot of sense. We talk about all the dinim, when a person's machpid, and, all right, a person drops a dime, right, not everyone's going to bother to pick up to go searching after the dime. Already a quarter is already money which is considered money of significance. So because somewhere between 10 cents and 15 cents and a quarter is about roughly what I estimate was the purchasing power of it. So how much does Matayim Zuz come to? It's got some good math. Matayim Zuz, okay, we're talking about, so if you say Zuz, so we say Pruta is about a quarter, so 200 times a quarter, 200 quarters is what? $50? Mm-hmm. Right, $50? Okay, so $50, so about $10,000. That was more or less the purchase. In their terms, it was about $10,000 was approximately what my time is. Obviously, halakhically, it's much less. 192. Okay? Obviously, halakhically, it's much less because we don't follow the purchasing. We follow the actual amount of the silver. So halakhically, when we talk about pigeon and ben, although halakhas, we follow the value of silver, which I said is significantly less. But the point of what was Matayim Zuz, the Rishonim point out, where else do we find the Matayim Zuz? We find by Ksuba. Mm-hmm. Right? The Ksuba of Omer is Matayim Zuz. Why that amount? So take a look in the Rashi, the fourth source. He says, Shira Chacham, Shizeo, Shira Hotzot, Tavim Zarsum, Abu Shibashan. What all the posts can point out is that the Shira of Matayim Zuz was meant to be what a person needs to sustain himself for a year. That was Matayim Zuz. And therefore, by Ksuba, what do we want the woman to have? We want the woman to know that if she gets divorced or she's widowed, she has a lump sum of Matayim Zuz. He has a lump sum of Matayim Zuz, and she knows that for the next year, she's set. She can sustain herself next year. Hopefully, she'll remarry. But she knows that she has for a year. She has what to sustain herself. And the same thing, Matayim Zuz represented for Hilchos Tzedakah, that the person has enough money to carry himself for the year. If he has enough money to carry himself for the year, he's not entitled. Don't take the Matnas Anim now. For the year, you're okay. Next year you don't have. So next year you'll take the Matnas Anim. But right now you have enough for the year. Just 1 second. If you have less than Matayim Zuz, you don't have enough to sustain yourself for the year, then you are entitled to take Matnas Anim.
Is the Matayim Zuz, or the equivalent that we're saying now, $10,000, is that before taxes, after taxes?
Okay, so that will be a factor. So let's try to now move. How do we say? Now the question becomes, the Mishnah is very clear. And that's quoted in the halacha, Matayim Zuz. But how do we translate that halacha l'maisa? So we already see in the times the Rishonim, the Rishonim took this idea of Matayim Zuz and began adapting it more in the current lifestyle. It says in the Mordechai in the fifth source ends up says Hakol lefi parnasato uparnasat anshei beito, that when we talk about Matayim Zuz, don't get hung up, don't get stuck on the issue of the specifics of the number. Okay, it depends on parnasato, what he needs for his parnasa. What he needs for the parnasa of his family, which means then we talk about times it depends on the family size. If it's a larger family, there are more needs, more expenses, then you will need more. If it's less people, then and therefore the Rishonim broke away somewhat from the absolute number of Matayim Zuz and expressed it more as we saw what you need for a year, what the parnasa necessary to sustain themselves. The Torah mentions this idea and mentions that we mentioned the Torah in source number 6, the Matayim Zuz. And he mentioned there for a year, and therefore he says that nowadays, since we don't have leket and shikha and pay and all that stuff, so he says yachalito to the Torah conclusion of number 6, ad shiyehelo keren litparnes min harevach. The Torah here makes a big jump. We spoke all until now just about the idea of matayim zuz, which seems to be just the flat amount. He has that total amount. The tour points out that if you have 200 zuz, right, in the times of the Mishnah, you're okay, because we always, the assumption was that we'd always be able to get money when you needed, but again, like a shekopeah. So if right now you're okay, you don't need. Next year, okay, so if next year you need, so next year you go in the field and you get leket shikhan peh next year. Okay, but nowadays we can't always rely, since we don't commonly have leket shikhan peh and everything else nowadays, you can't necessarily rely that next year, if you use up your matayim zuz, we can't guarantee that you will be able to sustain yourself, the next year you will find a source of sustenance available, and therefore if you use up your matayim zuz now, next year you're going to find yourself with nothing left. And next year you find yourself falling flat in your face. And therefore the tour took it one step even further, that you have to be able to ensure that you will be able to have continued sustenance, and therefore you can earn enough that you will be able, that you have enough money in your hand, keren litparnes min harevach, that without using up the capital that you have, you will be able to continue to sustain yourself, because you can't necessarily rely on everything else. What would happen nowadays if we say, look, there's social services and social security, and there's unemployment, and there's welfare, all right? So even if you're not going to get, you can maybe get from other sources, I don't know if that would be, maybe that would have to be taken back. All right, so these are issues, but we, in area we see clearly that Rishonim are moving in the direction of you need to have enough to sustain yourself and your family for the time. Right? The Shulchan Aruch quotes basically these halachas that we've spoken about. When the issue of time wants to see everything inside. Although the Ramah has a fascinating extension of the idea we saw in the Mishnah, that if you have below the matayim zuz, and you got a lot of people give you, and you got a lot at once, that's fine. The Ramah says, what do you do about a Meshulach? A Meshulach, he's trying to collect for himself. He leaves, he comes, and he doesn't have parnasa. So he takes his stick on his shoulder, wraps up his belongings, and goes to collect. Okay? So he goes to one city, he goes to another city, he goes to another city. He's 500 miles away from home. And now he's hit the 200 zuz. He's hit the 200 zuz. Okay? He managed to collect successfully his matayim zuz. So what do we say now? Stop here. All right. Stop here wherever you are. You got your matayim zuz. Go back home. Okay? You get back home, you end up fine, you have that, then go start over again. Says the Ramah, no, you don't have to do that. The Ramah quotes here in the first paragraph in source number 7, Haga, umisha alech mi beto v'nosea mi ili l'kabetz, ko haderach shea b'dato lisak shalach mi beto nivga pamachat. The whole collection route, even if he came across matayim zuz in the middle of the route, just like we saw that if you have less than matayim zuz, you can get a lot at once, so to hear, if you are below matayim zuz and you decide that you have to embark on a collection campaign, then whatever you will get as part of that collection campaign is acceptable, even if you encounter, you hit the 200 zuz mark somewhere along the way. Okay? The Rav Shach then continues. He talks about the idea of the chov in terms of the need to sell, okay, which we'll come back to a little bit later. In Sif Bet, so that's number 7, the Shofar again emphasizes the idea that we have been building up to. Yesh omrim shelo nemru ashirim halalu ela bimehem. Of course, the tour, that all these shiurim, which the matayim zuz, and before I talked about the kupa and the tamchoy, other tzedakah collections, were said in those times. Avo bizman hazeh, yachol itol ad shelo keren kadesh yitpanez hu beto miharevach, udvarav shel tam hein. As long as he's not able to properly sustain himself, then he is considered an ani. He's considered he's able to accept tzedakah with varam shotam. Okay, so this is basically what we have in the sources. With this, we move over to the second column, perhaps the more halacha lemaisa question. And this, all the svarim, basically they quoted tshuva, well, slight variations in the exact phraseology, tshuva from Rava Yashiv. How do we define an ani nowadays as far as accepting tzedakah, as far as accepting ma'aser ani, as far as accepting matanos levyonim, because as we saw in the Aruch HaShulchan, the halachas are parallel, and we don't really distinguish between the two of them. He asks, what is the geder ani from matanos levyonim? Says Rav Yashiv here in source number 8. Tshuva, geder ani sheyotzim bo yidei machov es matanos levyonim hu, mi she'en lo matayim zuz. Okay. That's fine. You have to start with the sources. Next line, v'hainu, schum kesef kedei lechiot shana shleima. Okay, addition of the Rishonim. One step further, Person earns a salary, but he doesn't make ends meet. He has a salary, maybe his wife also has a salary, but they don't make ends meet.
For his family,
they're not able to make men's meat every month. They have a deficit. Sometimes people have a deficit, but they have this saving, that saving. Okay, so if they're missing 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 a month, okay, but they have money on the side that they could, if need be, pull into. But sometimes you have people who finish the month and don't finish the month, and they don't have savings on the side to fill in. If they don't have enough to either enough salary or enough savings to supplement the salary, and therefore they're able to sustain themselves for the year, they, as we saw, based on the way we've shown them, understand this halach matayim zuz, they would be considered as an ani and would be entitled to accept matanos levion. Hareza ani gamur v'yasimboy dechoz matanos lanim. Right. On the other hand, though, there are people who may have enough salary or may have money on the side, and those people, even though they may collect because maybe they don't want to use the savings, but they may have savings and they may have enough to last for the year, they may not actually fall under the category of matanos levion. Okay? He then goes into further discussions of a person has other needs, specifically because of haskala, medical needs. Alright, that's also included, he's also entitled to. On the other hand, if a person invested heavily in the stock market, okay, and he had investments that fell, he got involved in risky investments, it's a bit of a pusha. You can't play a market aggressively and say, well, if I fail, then bail me out. Vidya, okay? A person doesn't have a right to invest aggressively and then ask other people to bail him out. All right? On the other hand, but he says that if lemaisa, he can't get out of it, then he still can get some help, although certainly that's a lower priority. Yeah.
He doesn't have the right to ask, There are two issues here.
All right? There are two issues here. One is he can certainly ask any private person, okay? He wants to go over to him and say, look, you want to help me out? Anyone's entitled to help him. However, if we talk about getting from a tzedakah, can he go to a tzedakah organization which is responsible for bona fide aniyim, okay, and they have limited funds to distribute, if they're going to give him money, then that means that's going to come at the expense of a bona fide aniyim, okay? And that's why this issue comes up, that such a person, right, he has a much lower priority, he should try to manage himself by getting either private donations or by loans. Right? It says if he can't handle it, even with that is, he can't find loans, he can't find some private donations. It says bedochak, he can be given also, but the person who sort of put himself through irresponsibility, put him into this financial situation, then there's a somewhat less than obligation.
Yeah, would someone have preferences?
Yeah.
Would someone be able to their own matanos levion by giving him money?
To give only to such a person. So I'm not sure. If that was the only money the person gave to someone who sort of put himself into situations. Again, if a person did something, he tried to open his store, and whatever, the store didn't go. Okay, he tried to open a business, open the store, didn't go, and they lost money, whatever. Okay, so he's gone. Okay, so such a person is an ani. Okay, wow. He didn't do something irresponsible. By the way, Rav Yashivi in the second paragraph, he's talking it's more about people who are irresponsible. Okay, he talks about the sikunim gvohim, hishkiya b'minayot, things like that.
Where does he get that from? That someone who's irresponsible is something not an ani.
Because he's saying such a person, that I think such a person doesn't have a right to make to get to have done such activities with having in the back of his mind. Well, if need be, I'll get from other people.
Right, but to say that
you're saying once he's here now, in front of us, Basher Husham, right now, he's saying this person, he doesn't have money. Basher Husham doesn't have money. So again, so Rabbi Asher, again, as I said, if he really can't get out of it, then you can give him. But again, because he put himself into this, okay, in a manner which he shouldn't have, then he has a lower priority. Okay?
I don't understand how the priorities have anything to do with Matanos Levionim. Priorities have to do with Tzedakah. Matanos Levionim, you could be using Matanos Levionim with the lowest level of Tzedakah also.
Okay. If
policy, maybe they shouldn't give him before they give others. But bottom line, if somebody gives him Matanos Lavionim, is
can
that
he, can you prefer your Matanos Lavionim? I'm not sure. Could be. Could be. What? That's the question. He's asking about Tuvah. It's not quite an Yim Shenim Mulganim because right now he is. But I guess the idea is that since...
It's
for people who are not really, who do have and are taking
and
attacking.
I'm talking about people who are not,
right.
Who are Rishayim or
right.
Not proper people.
People, Mulganim, I think it's talking about people who have money and are collecting even though they have money. All right, so I'm not 100. Again, he doesn't end it with a clear, but he clearly indicates that that's such a person has less lower priority, and doesn't seem to be so clear that he would be included. Just a few more points, and I'd like to leave a few minutes at the end for one other thing. Rav Moshe takes this idea a step further, and that is, what if a person is expecting to have to marry off a child in that year? They have enough, Baruch Hashem, they have a job. They're able to sustain themselves, that's for day-to-day living. They can pay the rent, they can pay the bills, they can buy the food, they can even pay the educational bills. However, they have to marry off a child. Suddenly, to have an expense like that, that's going to send the family into financial chaos. So Moshe says that also is considered that kind of person for this year. That person falls under the category of an ani, because at this point for this need, right? So since even a person has matayim zuz, if he has to marry, he's entitled to take tzedakah. Since, I guess we saw, the idea of matayim zuz is someone who is able to sustain himself, and a person would not be able to, with matayim zuz, would not be enough when you have to take this into account. This becomes a question, how far do you take that? How much a plate? Right? He wants to make a way, it would cost him $100 a plate. That's probably very little. Right. He wants to make a wedding, it's going to cost him $200 a plate when he couldn't get it with a wedding. It costs $100 a plate. He wants to invite 500 people to the wedding when he could get away to. Right. How far do you take it? Right. And what if you want? What is he giving the chassam? What is the chalal giving? They're buying an apartment, not buying an apartment. Right. See, the question of how, I'm not quite sure how far you take this idea. Right. Well, it does depend on the social norm, what's the social society amongst the living. Yeah.
So
in Eretz Yisrael, it's much more of an issue because there it's much more common to do so, and it probably would make a difference where you are. But that's what I'm saying. When I was tongue in cheek, the question is the same thing in terms of a person who, as I said, in terms of education, which is now a very significant course. It's not. There is a serious question: would a person who is able to handle, their day to day, but suddenly as the children begin having number one or two or three children of college or graduate school, does that push them into a possibility of they should be now fall under the halakha category of mataras levi of anim? Or do we say that it depends what they do? If they could have gone to something else where it's less, or should we say what's considered normal? Is it normal to get financial aid for that? But these are questions I'm not quite sure how to take it. But if these criteria perhaps the nth degree, then we can perhaps come out the matter. Maybe everybody's in our need because everyone can use some financial help in whether it's marrying for children or supporting children's education or having. But I guess it means within a certain reason, a certain reasonable range. Fascinating, the Shevet Halevi has an interesting question. He has a question here: what happens if a person has money he could use, but if he uses up the money, he wants to take his money to buy a house to rent, so he will have some source of income. Can he take the money that he has to convert it into a source of income? And the Shevet Halevi actually writes that he's allowed to, based on what we saw on the tour, that nowadays you need to have some backing because you can't rely, if you use up your principal, you're not going to have what to then go on next year. You can't rely to have next year, and therefore it is possible for a person to take his money and to invest it in something which will produce a yield, even though once he's bought that apartment, then the rent he's going to get yearly will not be enough, and he will need to supplement with tzedakah. He says the person is allowed to do that. The final thing I just want to mention over here is we spoke a little bit about the need to possibly, if a person has extra items, he should sell them before taking tzedakah. The Shevet Halevi has one other thing that, if you look carefully in the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, it talks about selling perhaps clay beso. But the house itself, even if a person is mentioned, a person may have a house, if it's much bigger than he needs, or then possibly, yes. But if a person is living in a house, and even though perhaps he could afford a smaller home, and if he were to sell his normal home where his family has been accustomed to living, and he'll move out to some distant community, and he'll get a much smaller home, he can manage there, but we don't require a person to sell his home, although if he has extra, perhaps klibayit, he may have to before he gets from public tzedakah. But the person's house, a person's dwelling, he writes, there's no need to sell.
Category?
What?
Would a car be in the same category?
So the car, so interesting, this becomes, so the car is less so, because the car, I think, all right, it could depend though how essential it is for his day-to-day life. If the person needs it for a car for his day-to-day, if it's something which certainly is not necessary, then perhaps he would have to sell it if that would raise enough to, again, to sustain him further. If he's not going to give him what he needs anyway, then he wouldn't have to. But if that would make or break it, by selling the car, he would be able to sustain himself, then there would be a greater need, unless they say it's so much essential for his day-to-day living. Yeah?
Does the fact that a person stays in the same place usually for years at a time, whereas a person changes cars maybe every 2 or 3 years,
well, such a person shouldn't be changing his cars every 2 or 3 years if he wants to get stuck up. Okay.
Renting out part of the home, renting out the basement.
Again, so if it's something which is normal and which he can do, then certainly it would be. But a person has to think, you know, before accepting tzedakah, are there expenses he can come back on, are there things he can do? Yeah.
What happens if somebody's supporting 5 kids in Kolo, and he comes to collect, says, "Okay, I need money."
Mm-hmm.
The question is collecting, supporting other people, is that qualified?
I'm sorry, again, he's asking or people are coming to him?
So he's asking.
Or shooting.
No, he's asking from the. He's asking for tzedakah.
Because he wants to support other people.
Because he is supporting.
Children,
you know.
So he could be collecting. If they are entitled to receive, okay, then he could collect on their behalf, if they themselves are entitled to receive. Okay, I mean, again, the matzah seven wouldn't be for him. It would have to be, you know, if he, every gabbait stock, every organization we collect and gets passed on to other people. The question is whether those people should, whether you have to support these people. But if these people are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they're learning properly, and they need to be supported, then it's part of supportive Torah.
Then shouldn't he have to collect with somebody else? If he's on the Seder Gabbai Tzedakah,
he has to give it on to other people.
But I'm saying he would, because the halacha is of Gabbai Tzedakah, can't collect on his own.
Oh, yeah, that's to make people pay. That's to make people pay. But people want to collect, yeah.
Yeah, going back to his question, in other words, similar to what we said earlier, if such a person is collecting, let's say, for kids in Kol and so on, and those kids are considered to be Samach HaShulchano, so is that person, like, I guess in that sense, he could be responsible to support those kids, so does that make him an Evion from a Tassel?
I don't think so. I think Max could be a Gabbai Tzedakah. I don't think he would be more than, I don't think he himself
it's
would
not
be.
A Gabbai Tzedakah. There's
Samach HaShulchano.
It's his own responsibility, so then maybe that makes him an Evion also.
Is that because we saw that he doesn't have to support them? I don't know. I'd be hesitant on that.
I mean, you could say about anybody,
right.
Even if you're a
kid. I think the idea is that normally a person has a responsibility to sustain the children, to provide food on the table for the family. That is a person's responsibility. If a person wants to sustain his older, grown, married children in Kollel, that's a privilege he can have. But that's not a responsibility. That's not a responsibility. I don't think you can call it under parnasal. Parnasal says I'm shebito because he doesn't
really
have. I don't. What?
You're not saying halach would be then.
I don't know if there. I don't think. I don't think so. I doubt that we consider samach hashulchan. Okay. I would like to also. Yeah.
You're talking about the halacha here. What about the hashgafa? Chazal teach us zoni matanos yichya.
So that's okay. So that's for the recipient. The recipient has to determine. Obviously, if a person has to realize that he's accepting stuff, it's not an ideal way to live a life. Okay, and a person should try as much as possible not to be in that kind of group. But we're discussing if he does come, what is the responsibility to give him? Torah tachas teil shuvah ma'isim tovim. And discussing matnas aniyim, some of you close from Karen B'Yavna probably know there is an organization called Yad Yisachar V'Yitzchak, which has many alumni from Karen B'Yavna have set up, which distributes food packages to families in Ashdod. And I'm not asking you for money, but There is, I would like to make you aware of this organization, and if you have a few minutes, I'll just want to stay as a short 5-minute clip, a little bit about the organization. I did agree when I was coming here to try to help them raise some funds for Kimcha de Pischa. They distribute 1,200 packages, 1,200 families who are in need. It's the families who don't have. And each food package is $100, and there's $100, $100. And I got a list of how much each, you know, chicken costs this, and kamatsu costs this, and wine costs this. Actually, more than 100. Just rounded it down. We rounded it down to 100. But it's, this is money which is going straight to Aniyim. What I'd like to do is, we prepared flyers and envelopes. If people can, I'd like, everyone can take a couple of envelopes, and those in Caribbean especially who are familiar with the Gnafikma, and to give it to the local, to everyone to take to give to the Rav wherever, or have a Gabbai Tzedakah in their community to be able to donate, to give something either from the appeal that they have, or if there are people in the community or relatives they know who might be able to help. Each person can just take some envelopes and then give them to people who would be relevant or be able to help. We appreciate very, very much. Okay, thank you for coming, thank you for your time, and if you have the few minutes before your class, you can watch the clip about the organization. Okay, so if they just take, you know, five envelopes and give them to the people in the community that they know are relative to.